Oma Genetivanandasya Genanjana Salakaya Chaksum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Didati Sva Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakam Svitamscha He Krishna Karna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakan Chena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishupanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhavyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 22, Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. Text 27. Mana stamba nimitanam janmadinam samantata sarva shreya pratipanam hanta muyan na mat para manastambani nimitanam janmadinam samantatah sarva shreyak pratipanam Hantamuyanamatparaha Manastambanimitainam Janmadinam samantataha Sarvashreyapratipanam Hantamuyanamatparaha Manastambani mitetanam Janmadinam samantataha Sarvashayak pratipanam Hantamuyanamat paraha Mana A false prestige. Stamba, because of this impudence. Nimitanam, which are causes. Janmaadinam, such as birth in a high family. Samantata, taken together. Sarvashreya, for the supreme benefit of life. Pratipanam, which are impediments. Hanta, also. Muyet, becomes bewildered. Na, not. Matparaha, my pure devotee. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advancement in devotional service because they are causes of false prestige and pride, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, who was given unlimited material opulence, had the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once Kuvera wanted to give Dhruva Maharaj a benediction, but although Dhruva Maharaj could have asked him for any amount of material opulence, he instead begged Kuvera that he might continue his devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a devotee is fixed in his devotional service, there is no need for the Lord to deprive him of his material opulences. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service, although he sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities. He does this to make a devotee prideless or to put him in a better position in devotional service. If a special devotee is meant for preaching but does not give up his family life or material opulences to take to the service of the Lord surely takes away his material opulences and establishes him in devotional service. Thus, the pure devotee becomes fully engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness. Manastamba nimitanam janmadinam samantataha sarvashreyak pratipanam hantamuyanam atparaha. Although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advancement in devotional service, because they are causes of false prestige and pride, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namo Om Vishnu Buddhaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Vajarane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarane Nirmana Moha Jita Sangha Dosha Adhyatma Nitya Vinavritti Kama Dvanvai Vimukha Sukaduka Sangar Vichan Yamuda Padam Avyam Tat. Bhagavad Gita Krishna begins explaining the process of devotional service by saying Nirmana Moha. So Nira means without and Mana means pride. Also we have the word Mana, which means the mind, because the mind is absorbed in the false ego or the false conception of identifying oneself with the body. Therefore, one is thinking he has something to be proud of. Prabhupada said at the end of his life, to give us an example, that when his body was very weak, practically he didn't have a body, he said that Krishna has put me into this position, so in this position there's no question of pride. If one doesn't have a material body, there's nothing to be proud of. Of course, the material body and our identification with it is more or less like a dream. At night we may dream that we've become something special, and we may take pride in our dream. But when we wake up, we realize it was just a dream. There was nothing to be overwhelmed about. Similarly, the soul is more or less an observer in the material world, although he's desiring to be put into different situations, but he's never becoming that situation. He never becomes a material body. He only remains the observer of the body. But out of false prestige, he falsely thinks himself to be the doer of activities. He falsely thinks himself to be a body, a material body. Therefore, Krishna says, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are actually carried out by the three modes of nature. Although we may take credit for doing so many things in this material world, but factually we do nothing. We simply observe and desire. Of course, Krishna is so kind that if the soul desires in the right way, desires that things be utilized in Krishna's service, then Krishna gives the soul all kinds of credit. And if the soul desires the things we use for his sense gratification, then he's chastised by the illusory energy in so many different ways, mostly by being put into different material circumstances. And here it says that for a devotee of the Lord, one who's on a special level, Madhparaha, the example of a Madhparaha devotee is Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj has said, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Vardhane Harer A. That Maharaj Ambarish, first of all, he fixed his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he engaged all his activities in the service of Krishna. And it is said, Karo Harir Mandira Marjanadi Shu Shukim Chakara Chuta Satkatodare. And at the end of the verse, it mentions that such a person is a Madhparaha devotee of Krishna. So, also Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, Tani Sarvani Karmani Yukta Asita Tani Sarvani Samyamya Yukta Asita Madhparaha. That one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. So one who's in Madhparaha, so intimately related to Krishna, that 24 hours a day, he cannot help but think of Krishna. That means that throughout the whole 24 hours a day, constantly Krishna, he's always engaged in some activity in service to Krishna. And because he's always trying to please Krishna and always engage in service to Krishna, therefore he's always meditating upon Krishna. Just like if one is always trying to please, just like in the office many times, the businessman, he has a picture of his wife and his children and his dog. Not necessarily in that order, but he has, and he's always working. He may not even like his work. He may like his work, or he may not like his work, but he's always thinking of his wife, children, and dog. In this way, he's dedicating his activities to them. His real meditation is on his family. But in order to please his family, he engages in some kind of work as an offering to them. That's called archana, worshiping the deities. Just like we worship the deities of Lord Krishna and the gopis. So the ordinary materialist, he worships his body and he worships his expansion, which he thinks is his pleasure expansion, his wife, and his plenary and partial expansions, his children, and his empowered incarnation, the dog. His Vaikuntha planet, his house, his Garuda, his car. So in this way, he's imagining that he has so many potencies and energies and expansions and that he's actually God. So, but this is all, it is said, stamba and mana, it is all false prestige and impudence because this has nothing to do with the self. The actual person who's identifying himself with these objects. He himself is just 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size, and all these persons he is identifying as his energies are actually not his energies, they're Krishna's energies. And he himself is Krishna's energy. Deha patya akalatradishu atma sanyeshva satsupi tesham pramato nidanam pashyanapi Napashiti. Although he's thinking my wife, my kalatra, my deha, my body, and adishu, if there's a wife and there's a body, then there's automatically adishu. So many things follow. And atma sanyesh. Sanyeshu means that they're my soldiers. They'll protect me, they'll comfort me, they'll take care of me. But although one is thinking like that, inevitably by the course of time, they themselves are destroyed and oneself is also destroyed. Although one is saying this, Pashana Pina Pashati, although one sees that no one here is surviving, still one tries to deny it. He doesn't see. So this is all called illusion. Although one knows he's going to die, still he's thinking, I'm going to live forever. Because unless one is thinking, I'm going to live forever, how can he make so many elaborate arrangements in this material world? And even if he thinks, I won't live forever, my body won't live forever, but I'll live forever through my children. How that happens, no one really knows, unless you become a ghost and haunt your children. How you live through your children is hard to say. But people have that conception, I'll live through my children. Because they really believe that their children are just an expansion of them. Therefore, without this misconception, how can anyone work so hard to amass a fortune or to build a big house or whatever they're doing in the material world, trying to get some permanency here? How could they do that unless they have some kind of illusion? And if someone starts telling them that it's an illusion, most people will become very disturbed. You become their greatest enemy. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement is sometimes not very popular. Sometimes it is popular amongst people who don't know what we're doing. They think it's, they identify as some kind of, I know in Australia, New Zealand, for instance, or at least in Australia, where they like the idea of going against the authority. They're a little bit rebellious. They like the Hare Krishnas because it appears to them to be something unusual. Almost against the norm, the authority, the standard. Little do they know that we are the standard. But because they think it's something quaint, therefore they like it. So sometimes people don't like it because they think it's not following the standard, or that actually they have some idea that there are four regular principles. And it's more than no meat, fish, and eggs. That they don't like the idea that these people are restraining or restricting their sense gratification, denying, sometimes they accuse the devotees of denying their parents. In America, it used to be quite a controversy that they used to say that if your guru tells you to kill your parents, that you would have to kill them. One court case, it was a court case where one young girl had ran away from her parents, and her father had died from some heart attack later on. Anyhow, they identified the father's heart attack with his child running away. So they brought in a picture of Lord Nrisimhadev to prove it. And they say, this is on the altar of all these temples. And here is a picture, bloody picture, of their god, a lion, half man, ripping apart this child's father. And the child is so bewildered, he is so brainwashed, that he's offering a garland to his father's killer. And this is who they worship. Just see how they're training these children up. No parent is safe if their child is Hare Krishna. So this is people's conception of what is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That they think that the Hare Krishna movement is either removing this false pride of identifying oneself with one's family. Of course, they don't think it's false pride. The pride of identifying oneself with some particular family, one's family affection. They think the Hare Krishna movement is against this. Therefore, the basic principle of material existence, they find out we're against it. So naturally, they become against us. And others think that we're just against everything, and they're also against everything except for themselves. They're just into doing their own thing. and they like us. But later on they find out that we're not into doing our own thing. We're into doing Krishna's thing. And that's usually not what their thing is. In any case, only very sincere people who are willing to become free from this false pride of identifying themselves with the material world, thinking themselves to be artificially important, and the impudence that comes from it. False pride is not enough. You have to be impudent against someone. It's not enough just to be falsely proud. You have to be able to make others feel bad about how great you are and how little they are. Otherwise, there's no fun. If everyone is full of false pride, then there's no fun. There's no one to be... You have to be impudent in order to get something out of it. Make others feel like they're small. You can keep a little... Of course, in this material world, to just be fair, you let people keep a little false pride, but not so much that they feel that they're better than you are. And what is it? Here it says, such as high birth and a high family. So this is the basic, most, I guess, one of the major positions of false pride. Although I myself am less intelligent, although I can't even hardly tie my shoelaces, sometimes I tie the two shoes together instead of tying my shoes. So, although I'm not very attractive, although I have no money, still my dad's a doctor, so I was born in a good family at least. Especially in some, of course, in this present culture, money is everything. Being born in a high family means your parents had money. So this is the cause of false prestige. In any case, janma adinam, janma ishraya shuta shivya edamanak madak puman, naivahat yavudatum vai tvamakinshana gotra. So the first thing is where you're born. If you start off in the wrong family, then it's an uphill struggle to have pride. You have to work your whole life. By the time you make money and get some name, then you're practically dead anyhow. You can't enjoy it. So the first advantage in the material world is to be born in a nice family which has money. Then you have something to be proud of. Then from the very beginning of your life, you can go around and tell the kids on your block, my dad's a judge, you better watch out. Bow down. And adinam, from that, so many other things can come. And if he says, take it together... The materialist, he has all these different what he thinks are assets, but actually they're all different aspects of illusion keeping him bound in the material cycle of birth and death. Therefore, Krishna very happily removes these things. It's just like sometimes someone may have a bandage on, and it's been on for a long time. So if you gradually remove it, especially if it's stuck to the hair and your skin, then it's very painful. So someone comes along, just rips it off. So you squeak for a few seconds, but then it goes away, then you forget about it. So Krishna, he's very happily, he comes along when he sees someone who's trying to be a devotee, and as we've seen in the previous verses, even sometimes someone's not trying to become a devotee, Krishna comes and just yanks all his attachments away. And he squeaks for a few minutes. But after a while, he forgets the whole thing. Prabhupada here himself seems to be giving his example here. Prabhupada, he wrote one poetry, bhajan, about his lost family members, how they're just a list of names. At one moment it seems when he's claiming, my dear beloved, I cannot live without you. And then she says, I cannot live without you. And within a month or a year, they're divorced. They think, I can't live with you. One moment is, I can't live without you, and the next moment is, I can't live if I have to be with you. So this is material life. Although one is full of attachment for one moment, after a while, when he loses that association, gradually the attachment wanes. And finally, one even forgets what his wife's name was. What was her name again? So Krishna sometimes takes away the material attachments from the materialist and especially from his devotees. But then when the devotee completely becomes a Matparaha devotee, has no other, he only sees Krishna at the stage of bhava or prema, then previously, which was the source of attachment and bondage, those same objects become the source of remembrance to Krishna, of Krishna. Everything is seen in relationship to Krishna. Everything inspires one to take to the loving service of Krishna. So the advanced stage, everything becomes favorable. And at that stage, Krishna gives one all kinds of facilities to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada said that I used to dream sometimes, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada would come to me and say, you must take sannyas. He'd say, I gotta take sannyas. It's horrible. Prabhupada would say like that. That Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada is coming to me in a dream, saying you must take sannyas, and Prabhupada is saying, horrible. This is horrible. But later on, Prabhupada points out that everything was lost. His business was, his servants stole the money from his business. One business after another collapsed. His wife sold his Bhagavatam to buy some biscuits for tea. Everything was, nothing was left. So Prabhupada said this, as Prabhupada points out in the verse, that Krishna made these arrangements. It wasn't that Prabhupada wasn't engaged in devotional service, but Krishna took away everything. Prabhupada is trying to utilize everything in Krishna's service, but in order to give him a better situation, he took everything away. So Prabhupada said, previously I had a few children, and now I have thousands of children, and I could not expect such service for my own children that these young boys and girls are rendering to me. Therefore, Krishna has given me a better family than the previous family I had. Of course, this is a completely spiritual family, and no one sold Bhagavatams just to get tea biscuits. They sold the Bhagavatams to get offerings to Krishna. So in that way, Krishna had taken Prabhupada's family away, material family, and given him a transcendental family with thousands of young boys and girls spreading Krishna consciousness, something that he was hoping his family would do, which they would never do. So Prabhupada gave him a huge family to spread Krishna consciousness with. Therefore, the conclusion is, whatever Krishna does is good. They had one play, which sometimes the devotees put on. Whatever Krishna does, in they used to do it in Peru, cualquier cosa que Krishna hace es bueno. Or whatever Krishna does is good. That story is one time, I'm sure you've heard the story, but we'll repeat it. One time one king was with his minister, and he was out, or actually the king was by himself, and he was out hunting. But then somehow or another, he pulled back his bow, and he missed, and the bow cut his ear off. So he was very disturbed, to say the least. So he came back to his minister, and told the minister that my ear has been cut off from the bow. What is the meaning of this? So the minister said, whatever Krishna does is good. So he said, what do you mean whatever Krishna does is good? This is crazy. He said, no, whatever Krishna does is good. So he said, this is completely ridiculous. So then he found out that these dacoits were in the forest and they were stealing cows. So he asked his minister what to do. So the minister said, well, whatever Krishna does is good. So the king said, this is ridiculous. I forget actually the whole story, but it's something like that. So he said, all right, if everything Krishna does is good, do you know the story better than that? Yeah, then he put it this minute. He said, if everything Krishna does is good, then I'm going to put you into jail. So then he asked the minister, what do you think of that? So he said, whatever Krishna does is good. So then he said, all right, you're in jail. So he had him arrested and put him in jail. And then the king, he went off again into the forest, I guess, hunting. And this time some dacoits came and captured him and took him to the temple, and they were going to sacrifice him. And just say they were to Mother Durga. So just they were raising the axe to cut his head off and sacrifice him. The head priest looked at the king and said, "Wait a second, you fools. Throw this man out. He only has one ear. He's imperfect." He said, "He can't be sacrificed. He's not worthy of being sacrificed to Mother Durga." So they threw him outside. He said, "Get out of here. Come back when you get another ear." So the king was very happy. He immediately went back to his kingdom and had his minister taken out of jail. And he said, "You're right, whatever Krishna does." He said, "All right, if everything Krishna does is good," do you know the story better than that? Yeah, then he put it in his minute. He said, "If everything Krishna does is good, then I'm going to put you into jail." So then he asked the minister, "What do you think of that?" So he said, "Whatever Krishna does is good." So then he said, "All right, you're in jail." So he had him arrested and put him in jail. And then the king, he went off again into the forest, I guess, hunting. And this time some dacoits came and captured him and took him to the temple, and they were going to sacrifice him. And just say they were to Mother Durga. So just they were raising the axe to cut his head off and sacrifice him. The head priest looked at the king and said, "Wait a second, you fools. Throw this man out. He only has one ear. He's imperfect." He said that he can't be sacrificed. He's not worthy of being sacrificed to Mother Durga. So they threw him outside. He said, "Get out of here. Come back when you get another ear." So the king was very happy. He immediately went back to his kingdom and had his minister taken out of jail. And he said, "You're right. Whatever Krishna does is good. Unless my ear was cut off, I would be dead." So he said, "But I can't understand it. Why did Krishna have you arrested and thrown into jail?" He said, "Because otherwise he would have taken me along with you. And I have two ears. And they would have arrested me. And after throwing you out, they would have sacrificed me." So whatever Krishna does is good. So we'll stop there. Are there any questions? It doesn't apply to devotees. It doesn't. Well, as soon as we become pure devotees, it doesn't apply. As long as we don't identify at all with this body, only identify ourselves with Krishna, then it doesn't apply. But as soon as we identify with this body, then naturally we identify everyone else as being something in relationship to this body. Isn't that right? Well, eventually we will. Hopefully we don't start identifying with some other body. In any case, as we lose our attachment to this material body and become attached to Krishna, then these things apply less and less. But we're just like when the sun's coming up, hopefully we're in the stage where the sun hasn't arisen yet, but still, because there's some light coming from the sun, therefore we can see something. But the sun hasn't completely risen. So we're not completely in darkness, and we're not completely in the light. We're somewhere in between. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.